Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come, Joel. Seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley. And you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Send us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, our text and voicemail line, always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, at 331-979-1369. That number again, 771-939-1369. We will get to some texts on the back end of today's show, as well as going through a couple of bits of Bulls and NBA news on the front end of today's show. And just a reminder to our listeners that today's episode of Locked On Bulls is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. RockAuto.com. Well, happy Monday, Bulls fans. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Some hot weather here in Chicago. So if you are Chicago or Chicago burbs folk, I hope you managed to stay cool this weekend with some AC or some proper fanning. Man, we are certainly in the dog days of summer right now. But as far as sports fans go, things are looking up. The NBA is less than 2 weeks away from its planned restart date. A week from this Thursday. We've got an NBA doubleheader scheduled on TNT. It's crazy. After all these months of being in quarantine, trying to figure out what the hell is going on in this country with this coronavirus pandemic, what's going on in the world of sports, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and we're all kind of bracing ourselves and hoping it goes well. For the most part, it seems like this NBA bubble plan is working fairly well so far. We'll see how they handle players who have had to leave and then come back. A couple of players, I believe, in addition to rookie sensation Zion Williamson, Clippers sixth man of the year candidate Montrezl Harrell has also recently left the bubble, both of whom left to attend urgent family matters, but are both planning on returning to the bubble before the season resumes. So we'll see how the league handles that. But as far as what we've been hearing from the media sources within the bubble and players themselves on their various social media platforms, everything seems to be going swimmingly, other than a couple of complaints here and there about less than stellar food options and some calls to the snitching hotline about players or other people in the bubble breaking bubble rules. Things seem to be under control for now. And of course, that comes with a heavy dose of testing for everybody involved. And we'll see once these players are up close and personal a lot more, you know, sweating, breathing heavy, getting in each other's grills on the basketball court, if that becomes a different issue. But for now, I think it's fair for Bulls fans to just be excited to watch competitive basketball. Again, even though our Bulls won't be involved, I know I personally can't wait, and I hope we get all the way through and get to watch not only some regular season games to get back into the swing of things, but watch playoff basketball. Best of seven series in NBA basketball is some of the most entertaining things to watch in the world of sports, in my opinion. Elsewhere in the world of sports, and here in the U.S., things are also moving forward. Major League Soccer is back in action in their own respective bubble. And Major League Baseball is even closer to its official restart than the NBA. Competitive baseball starts this week, later this week. Cubs and Sox had their first exhibition scrimmage game between each other yesterday. Sox beating the Cubs at Wrigley Field. They're doing it again tonight down on the south side at Guaranteed Rate Field. And man, people were excited. I saw earlier today, NBC Sports Chicago said that they had their highest ratings for a White Sox game last night since 2012. Highest rated baseball game since 2012. And it was an exhibition game. But it was baseball. And it was competitive baseball. And it was a crosstown game. So, not surprised. Baseball fans are happy and excited to get baseball back. 60-game season on deck for Major League Baseball. Cubs and Bulls fans, or Cubs and Sox fans, both very much excited to see that get underway. So, we're all kind of holding our breath and crossing our fingers. There's a lot of optimism in the world of sports right now that things can and will get back to some level of normalcy fairly soon. And of course, not completely normal. Definitely weird to watch, you know, that baseball game last night and see a completely empty Wrigley Field. It's going to take some getting used to. I'm sure the same will be said for watching an NBA game without fans in the stands. But hey, I'll take professional sports with no fans in attendance over no sports at all. And that's an easy decision. Before we get to a couple pieces of news on the NBA and Bulls fronts, wanted to tell our listeners about rockauto.com. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's almost impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX? And wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business, serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers that have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals as do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. So, a little bit of house cleaning, a couple pieces of news for the Bulls and the league. First off, the news that affects the Bulls most specifically, and that is the news that we learned on, I believe, Friday, and after Jordan and I recorded our episode. But so the Athletic first posted this, and then it was confirmed by other sources that representatives from the Delete Eight teams, which include our beloved Bulls, are now allowed to send representatives to the bubble on the Disney World ESPN Wide World of Sports complex. So they are essentially allowed to be sending scouts now. We had heard earlier on when we were learning all the do's and don'ts and rules and regulations of this bubble that the Delete Eight teams would not be allowed to send any representatives to the bubble as the league was trying to minimize the number of people that the bubble would be maintaining and regulating and social distancing, etc. So, obviously the Bulls, among the other seven Delete Eight teams, had grievances with this ruling and the league's plan on moving forward without them this season because it would put them at a competitive disadvantage to not have reps at the bubble to scout players for the purposes of potential future trades, potential future free agents that they want to keep an eye on, so on and so forth. And that is absolutely inarguably true. That is a competitive disadvantage to not be able to send your team's representatives and scouts to games as the NBA season would normally operate. So somewhere in there, the league changed its mind and said, okay, once competitive games begin, these teams are allowed to send representatives. And it is specified in this report that teams can send up to three representatives who will have to register a negative test for COVID-19 that is authorized by the league. And then there are other rules for these reps as far as where they're allowed to go, which is basically their off-campus hotel, transporting to the arena, and that's it. Basically, you're quarantined at an off-campus hotel, take a shuttle to the arena, and then back to your hotel. And when you're at the arena, these reps from the Delete 8 teams will not be allowed to mingle or interact with any members of the collective traveling parties from the 22 teams that are in the bubble, or be allowed to be at their designated hotels and campus spaces. So basically where all the NBA players and team personnel are right now, the three various hotels and the campuses that surround them, the Delete 8 reps would not be allowed to be in those areas. They're only allowed to be in their off-campus hotel, transport to the arena, and back to their hotel. So it's not a great addition of trying to get that competitiveness back to a level playing field for these Delete 8 teams, because they won't actually be allowed to have these scouts interact with the other people in the league. They're basically only allowed to go there and watch the games. So how much better is that than just watching the games at home from their televisions? Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a professional scout, so I'm guessing there are some benefits to watching these players and these teams and this competition up close and in person, as opposed to watching on TV. But how much more of a competitive advantage, or how much more can you glean from doing it and watching these games in person? I don't know. I can't imagine. It's a staggering difference. So we'll see if we hear anything in the coming days coming out from the Bulls or the Bulls media about whether or not the team is sending teams or is planning to send representatives of the team down to the bubble to do some scouting. We did hear from NBC Sports Chicago's Casey Johnson in his report on this new detail that the Bulls are still mainly focused right now on this potential of a second bubble, the fact that that would likely be here in Chicago, and getting ready for something of that nature. And that would certainly take priority and precedence over any scouts and representatives that they would be sending down to Florida. So there that is. It's a nice gesture by the league to try and level the playing field a little bit and recognize that, yes, for these Delete 8 teams, they are at a competitive disadvantage in a variety of ways, and they're trying to make up for that in one way that they deem to be at least manageable when it comes to the number of people that are being brought in and out of this bubble. So we'll see, especially considering the Bulls have a new front office that's probably evaluating a lot with this organization right now and trying to figure out what the best path forward is. And I'm sure that will include making some changes to this roster in the not-so-distant future. So being able to get some team reps down to Florida and watch these teams play to get an eye on maybe some players that they're interested in, including some upcoming free agents, or maybe some players on rosters that might be looking to shake things up as well, the Bulls could make use of that time. The other NBA news that we heard recently from Shams and a few other sources is that the NBA's season-long awards are going to be voted on based on the regular season stop date of March 11th. So we had expected that to be the case, but we hadn't gotten official word. It is official now, as of a couple days ago. The NBA's annual performance awards, as in MVP, Rookie of the Year, Sixth Man, Defensive Player of the Year, Coach of the Year, will be based upon regular season through March 11th, when the season was suspended. So does that in any way affect the Bulls? Well, the only award there that you would be thinking a Bull has an outside shot of is coach of the year. I'm just kidding. Oh, man, Jim Boylan. Is maybe Coby White getting some rookie of the year votes? Now, I don't expect Coby to get any first place votes. I think all first place votes will either go to Ja Morant or maybe Zion Williamson. But now, this official announcement of March 11th being the cutoff date for games that matter for voting on these awards certainly benefits Ja Morant more so than Zion Williamson, because, say, hypothetically, Zion outperforms Ja Morant in the bubble, that could have led more people to say, hey, I know Zion's season was shortened by injury, but man, you know, he had a heck of a 20 or so games at the back end of the regular season that was normal, and then in the bubble he continued that and was just dominant. And, you know, hey, maybe the Pelicans do what everybody expected and make their playoff run, and maybe Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies fall short in the bubble, and that would lead some people to vote for Zion instead. Now it looks like this is going to be Ja Morant's award. I would be surprised to see Zion edge him out, knowing that now Zion's resume for the voting is just those 20 games. I think 19, actually, is the exact number of games he played this season. And Ja Morant certainly has a more complete, compelling case to be Rookie of the Year. Other names on that list, and it's actually something my my fellow Outsiders guys and our executive producer, Kevin Bulldog Anderson, were talking about over the weekend. I would probably put Kendrick Nunn third on that list. What he did for the Miami Heat this year was really impressive, considering that really not many people knew all that much. And certainly there weren't that many great expectations for him coming into the season. And especially when considering the big role he played on a Heat team that was surprisingly good. I think he's certainly a guy who's going to be booking a spot in the top five as far as Rookie of the Year voting. I would say probably he will get more votes than Tyler Hero, being teammates that kind of cancel each other's votes out a little bit. Coby White's probably in there somewhere, maybe fourth. I know that Bulls fans will say, well, look at the amazing stretch that Coby had after the All-Star break. And after the All-Star break, Coby averaged, I want to say, like, you know, 25 points and you know, a handful of assists and shot the ball really well. Had that stretch of, you know, three games in a row scoring 30-plus off the bench as a rookie, first person in NBA history to do that. Really impressive stuff, even earning Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month honors in February. And rightly so. But you also have to remember the entire body of work from Coby's rookie year. And whether you want to blame Jim Boylan and the system or Coby being, you know, a little bit of a deer in the headlights rookie or being told to do the wrong things or having the rookie wall hit somewhere in there, whatever you want to say happened or why it happened, his numbers for the first half of the season were not good. And I'm talking, you know, field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, assist to turnover ratio. The numbers just didn't look good for Coby, basically from October through January. And again, I think you can put some of that blame on his coach not using him properly, but the numbers are the numbers. And I think a month and a half of really fun and impressive electric Coby White is not enough to get him those votes. Whereas you might say, well, what about, you know, Zion? Zion played 19 games. So why is it that he would be ahead of Coby White when, hey, Coby White had a stretch of, you could say, probably around that many games where he was really good. So why does, you know, Zion get the votes ahead of him? Well, I mean, I think it's a couple factors. First of all, Zion came into a Pelicans team and made them exponentially better. The Pelicans started to play really solid basketball with Zion in the fold. And Zion was incredible. Incredible in the 19 games he played. And again, not to say that Coby wasn't. including, you know, making some historic NBA stats for a rookie, and especially rookie playing a reserve role. But the hype around Zion and the quality of games that Zion played when he came back, I think we'll just lend more people to say he gets a vote. And again, I don't think that that many people will say they are going to give that vote to Zion over Ja as far as first place votes. But I do think that Zion will edge Kobe for third place votes, or for second place votes rather. So this decision, the official decision to say, okay, all, you know, season long awards stop at March 11th. It doesn't hurt Kobe White that the Bulls are outside the bubble. But I think that Kobe made his case in that month and a half to be a guy worthy of Rookie of the Year votes, where maybe some other lottery picks that people thought would get those votes at the beginning of the season won't, or that Kobe might make a push to get more votes than he would have had he not had that amazing, you know, month and a half stretch around, you know, slightly before and then after the All-Star break. I just think it's not enough, and it was done on a team so bad that the votes aren't going to get there. It's not to say that you still can't be really happy about what Kobe did this season. Despite the slow start that I mentioned, I think when Bulls fans were getting really sick of watching this team, you know, find different and find same ways to lose games season, you know, all season long, Kobe's electric performance at the back end of that season was one of the few things that those of us still watching could, you know, could enjoy and made watching the Bulls somewhat tolerable. You know, between that and some of Zach's heroic offensive nights, I mean, getting excited about Kobe's potential really saved the fan base that was still watching, even to a point where I think it maybe has put too high of expectations on what is to come for Kobe White. Not to say I don't think he could be a really good player in this league, but that electric performance he had down the stretch is, I hope it doesn't put Kobe in a position where Bulls fans will be asking too much of him next season. But I still do think he did enough to finish top five in Rookie of the Year voting. I think that's pretty much the only vote that any Bulls will be getting, players, personnel, or otherwise. And you might say, well, hey, maybe, you know, does Kobe get some Sixth Man of the Year vote in there? Because, yes, he's a rookie, but look what he did as a prominently bench role player, just getting his first and only start of the season in the last game that the Bulls played. But I would say that there are so many other candidates on that list that Kobe White will probably not appear. I mean, he might get in the, you know, others receiving votes category with, you know, one or two sprinkled in there, but I would certainly say he's much more likely to finish in a respectable top five spot in the Rookie of the Year voting than he is to appear on Sixth Man of the Year. And other than that, some people are talking about Chris Dunn maybe, you know, being a guy who gets votes for all defensive team, but defensive player of the year, no, not a shot. That's just simple. There are, again, like Sixth Man of the Year, a long list of worthy candidates for that award, and I do not see Chris Dunn coming anywhere near the top of that list. All right, let's take one text message from our inbox before we get out of here, and then we'll save the rest of mailbag content for an episode later this week where hopefully Jordan and I will be on the mics together. Here is one text that I thought was interesting from the 720. Something that irritates me is the narrative that Zach can't be a number one because he doesn't affect winning. Well, year one, he was coming back from an ACL. Year two was his first year removed from the ACL injury. Year three, 2 years removed from the ACL, and he put up some really good numbers offensively while improving ever so slightly on the defense. On the defensive end, in a merry-go-round system where the coach misuses all of his players, even Felicio. Seriously, how does this guy get into games? I would put Benny the Bull out there before Felicio, but I digress. Anyway, I'm really hoping that Arturas has full autonomy and brings in a real coach with a real player development department and real training staff. If Zach can't become the superstar I believe in those, I believe he can in those conditions, whenever the season starts, then I'll concede. On a side note, how would you guys feel about Arturas bringing in Popovich? He's done all he can in San Antonio, and based on the roster, the team looks like it's heading for a rebuild in the next couple years. I'm also hearing rumors that maybe he and San Antonio will part ways. Thanks for checking in. Okay, let's break that down in order. As far as being frustrated with the Zach doesn't affect winning narrative, I certainly understand. I think Jordan and I would probably both agree with you for the most part that Zach gets that knock on his overall, you know, credit versus discredit, you know, NBA fans arc probably too much. The only winning the Bulls did this year, in my opinion, was because of Zach LaVine, not in spite of him. It was a poorly coached team. It was, yes, a team that was affected by injury, by lack of available pieces that were crucial pieces, but overall a roster that had some shortcomings in talent, certainly shortcomings in development, and that is where I would agree with our texter that, you know, a lack of player development, whether it's Zach or otherwise on this roster this season, was the biggest problem, and to that I, yes, point mostly to the head coach and the player development staff, which, hey, guess what? As we learned from Mark Eversley when he arrived, was one person. So, yes, I do believe that AK and Eversley will change that and will hire a deeper, more thorough staff for player development. We already know there's going to be at least somewhat turnover on the training staff department, as we learned that Jeff Tanaka's contract was not extended, so we'll see how they rebuild, reshape, and rehire for the training and conditioning staff. So there's optimism for change there. I do think there's optimism that there is real full autonomy and authority given to Arturas right now, and Bulls fans are starting to question that because Jim Boylan's still here. I am not. It's hard. It's frustrating. I know. Jordan and I talked about it a lot on Friday's episode. Go back and listen to that one if you haven't already. We went deep in on why Jim is still here. But I still have faith that full authority will be given. Regardless of, oh, we're trying to pinch pennies because of the pandemic, you know, cutting costs and that other Jerry Reinsdorf quote that came out last week about losing, you know, $100 million, whatever. I'm still believing that AK and his staff will be left alone to do their jobs. And if it turns out that that isn't the case and Jerry and Michael are still running this like a mom-and-pop shop and looking over his shoulder and hamstringing Arturas on every turn, then, yeah, I'll be pissed, and we could talk about that when it happens. But right now, I'm not believing that yet. I'm not buying into that conspiracy yet. I believe full authority is here. So as our texter said, if this new regime brings in a more competent head coach with a well-rounded staff of support in player personnel development and in coaching, assistant coaching, yeah, maybe we can see Zach take an even bigger step. But the texter's not wrong to point out that he put up some pretty impressive numbers this season. 25-4-4 on 45% shooting from the floor, which, as Jordan pointed out on Twitter over the weekend, is a pretty short list of players, 25 and younger. It's Zach, and then it's like three or four other all-star caliber players. So, yeah, he's been impressive. You mentioned his slight uptick on the defensive end. Give him credit for certainly showing more effort on the defensive end this season, and he did get a little bit better. We can certainly hope that he continues to improve on that end as he's still just now reaching the prime of his career. So he can improve, and hopefully he will improve. The superstar label is the one thing that I've always kind of argued back on a little bit with Zach. I think he is an all-star caliber player, but to me there is a different in there's a difference in tier when you talk about all-star players and superstar players. To me, superstar players, there are at any given time 5 to 10 of them in the league. Right now, Zach is not one. And I don't wholeheartedly believe that he can become one. It would certainly be a lot easier for Bulls fans and a lot better for Bulls fans if he could. It would be nice to know that the Bulls have that piece on their roster as opposed to still looking for it, either in free agency or trades or the draft. I think we'll find out pretty soon with a new front office regime, hopefully a new coaching staff, new player development staff, just what that ceiling for Zach is and whether or not he is going to be a piece that leads this team back to relevancy and the piece that they build around. And your last thought about Arturas bringing in Pop. I do agree that I think Pop's probably near the end of his tenure with the Spurs. I mean, the dude has one of the most impressive resumes in NBA history as far as guys and head coaches and chairs. The five championships he's won with the Spurs, ranging all the way from the last title of the last season of the 90s all the way to winning the title and dethroning the Heatles in 2014. Wildly impressive stretch from Pop. And had even managed to keep the Spurs relevant in the departure and retirement of Tim Duncan and Manu and Tony Parker. And, of course, certainly Kawhi helped with that. But then even after Kawhi, with a completely overhauled roster. The DeRozan trade doesn't seem to be working out super well for them, and I don't think that the DeRozan thing is probably going to be their long-term answer. So I do think that a rebuild is coming for the Spurs, and that could coincide with Greg Popovich finally saying, thanks, San Antonio, I'm out. I have a gut feeling that if Pop does that, then Pop will just walk away. And maybe with all of his, you know, quirky sideline interviews and the way that he has interacted with the media over the years, he might decide that it'd be fun to do some occasional, you know, analyst gig as a broadcaster for NBA television in some variety. Or I could also see him just pulling a Phil Jackson and saying, all right, peace out, y'all. I'm going to go find my little, you know, sliver of peace and quiet somewhere, you know, whether it be the woods of Montana or elsewhere. I could very much so just see Pop saying, I'm going to go away so I don't have to deal with the media, so I don't have to deal with the day-to-day stresses of this job. And, you know, Pop has had an amazing career. And if he decided to, you know, hang up the suit, I would not be surprised. Obviously, I would love it if Arturas could convince him to stay in the game and come be our new coach. There, I mean, who would turn down Greg Popovich? Nobody in their right mind would turn down Greg Popovich. I just don't think it's very likely, given the fact that I think when he's done with the Spurs, whether or not he might come back at some point like Phil did, you know, he left the second three-peat in 98, you know, took some time off, then comes back and coaches Kobe and Shaq and the Lakers to several titles. I think when he leaves the Spurs, he'll at least take a year off and kind of take a breath, figure out what he wants to do. And heck, maybe what he wants to do is hang around the Spurs after everything he's done for the organization and all the success he's had, continue on with them in some capacity as some kind of front office role or advisory role. You know, look at Tim Duncan. Dude retired, left, did his own thing for a couple of years, and now has come back and is serving as an assistant coach on Pop's bench. Clearly that is a, you know, a family style organization. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Pop, if he sticks around the NBA at all, once he decides to not continue as a head coach, to do some other job and find some other way to continue on with the Spurs. We'll see what happens there. But I think he's either going to stick with the Spurs in some other job once he decides he doesn't want to coach anymore, or he's just going to walk away for a while. Would love Pop to become a part of the Bulls organization. Just don't think it's likely. Thanks for that text. We got some other new text messages in our inbox, as well as a couple of fresh voicemails. Jordan and I will get to those later on in the week. And then until then, as I said, go back and listen to our episode from Friday if you haven't yet. We went in deep on on why is Boylan still here from every possible angle, and touched on some of the things that Darnell Mabry mentioned in his Athletic column about that from last week. Also reached out to Darnell about coming on and sharing some of his thoughts on that column and the Bulls' weird dormancy right now. So hopefully we'll get Darnell back on the pod sometime soon. Also, if you didn't listen to it last Thursday, I had my guy Big Dave Watson on from Bulls Outsiders. We had a really fun chat about the Bulls and the bubble and a lot of other stuff. So give that a listen as well if you haven't already. We will be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. We're back to 5 days a week now that the NBA season is getting close to a return. We are less than 2 weeks away. Thank God. For my partner, Jordan Malley, I am Matt Peck. Reminding you, as always, that text and voicemail line is there for you. Hit us up before we do our next mailbag episode, 331-979-1369. 331-979-1369. Shoot us an email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com. You can always find us on Twitter at @Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at @LockedOnBulls. Once again, thanks to our sponsor for today's show, rockauto.com. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Peace out, Bulls Nation.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com